Look back at the calendar now. Many years don't have any books written about them. 1492 has a couple. 1789 has a zillion. 1787 has a few. 1800 has a couple. 1865 has a couple of books written about it. 1979 joins the pantheon of important years that may have set the stage for the decades in the future. A year of seismic change was 1979. Deng Xiaoping moved communist China to a market-based economy. Ayatollah Khomeini returned triumphantly to Iran, a nation we still don't have diplomatic relations with, years later. A young woman named Margaret Thatcher took the reins of power in Britain. Pope John Paul II inspired millions of Polish citizens living under communist rule and inspired what became the fall of the Soviet Union. The world certainly shifted in the late 70s. Journalist Christian Carroll argues that the year 1979 marked the turning point to our modern age. His new book is called Strange Rebels, 1979 and the Birth of the 21st Century. He joins us today from Washington, D.C. Boy, it's quite a list. And welcome, Christian. It's quite a list what happened in 1979.
Well, it is. And thank you, John, for inviting me. I'm really happy to be here.
Let's talk about what first clued you in that 79 was an intersection point for a whole variety of things that is happening today.
Well, it's important to emphasize that I am not a professional historian. I'm not a scholar, and I'm sure the book will show that for good and for bad. I am, in fact, a working journalist, and I got the idea for the book when I was a Newsweek correspondent covering the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. I arrived in Afghanistan shortly after 9/11 and ended up in Kabul soon after that. And in early 2002, one of the things that struck me about Kabul was the way that a lot of the development that had occurred in Afghanistan, and especially in its capital, had occurred in the 1960s and 70s. All the big public buildings were built in the 70s. If you got a ride with someone, you found yourself driving around in a big American car from the 1970s. And basically, starting at the end of the 70s, history for Afghanistan began to run in reverse. Women in the 1960s and 70s in Kabul were perfectly okay walking around in burqas and short skirts, and it was one, like many other countries, a country that seemed to be on a path towards kind of secular modernization. And then something happened at the end of the decade, which was the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. And from that point on, it was downhill. Afghanistan fell apart. And when I was there, I found myself thinking about why this happened. And lo and behold, a few years later, I was in Iraq. Same thing, big American cars from the 1970s. You know, you're living in all the in houses that were built in the 1970s with, you know, stereos that have 8-track tape players in them. And you find yourself thinking, well, wait a minute, what happened here? And one of the things that happened there was in 1979. I don't talk about this much in the book because for a variety of reasons, it's not that interesting. But 1979, Saddam Hussein became president of Iraq. Mm. And shortly after that, he invaded Iran, which started an 8-year war. And then he invaded Kuwait, which started all the problems with the U.S. And Iraq also kind of, in a certain sense, ground to a halt. And you begin thinking about this moment at the end of the 1970s and think, what happened? And then you realize there were a lot of very interesting things going on in the world.
Well, you've got a story of things swept away, as you described there in Kabul. But there's also seeds sown that would bear extraordinary fruit in China, and particularly with the Pope John Paul II's confrontation of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, well, I think those stories are absolutely fascinating. And I think we've forgotten that a lot of these things happened at this particular moment. In many ways, the China story is the most interesting. I think that's the one I enjoyed doing the most in my book, because China scholars are brilliant, right? They know China so incredibly well, but they tend to know it so well, they tend to forget some of the really obvious things about it. And I just wanted to tell this story about this really incredibly dramatic moment when Deng Xiaoping takes power in China at the end of 1978, and then very quietly he's telling other communists, leading members of the Communist Party, hey, you know what? We need to emphasize economic development, and that's going to mean some people get rich quicker than others, you know, which was just an unbelievably dramatic departure from Maoism, which was all about, you know, radical equality and, you know, we hate capitalism and it just can't happen. And here's the guy who is one of Mao Zedong's apostles quietly telling the Communist Party in the world's most populous country, you know, it just isn't working. So we got to try something else.
You know, it was
I find that incredibly dramatic.
Well, it was quiet to Western observers and to maybe some of the China scholars. But, you know, with the Cultural Revolution in China right there in memory, fresh memory for the people of that nation, the brutal Cultural Revolution, to hear slogans like "to be rich is glorious" and "it doesn't matter if a cat is black or white so long as it catches mice," I mean, those could not have been stated quietly in China at that moment.
Right, but the a lot of people at the time did understand that something significant was happening. The Chinese certainly got it. And I have a very nice interview in my book with a guy who was one of the very first private entrepreneurs who started his business in the city of Guangzhou in southern China in, I believe it was March 1979. So the Chinese themselves, oh, they totally got it. But what the outside world didn't understand was the potential momentousness of these changes. Nobody at the time would have, it would have occurred to no one to say, oh, you know, China is going to be a capitalist country in 20 years. The comparisons that people drew at the time with these very modest reforms that started the whole thing were with Yugoslavia, Hungary, even East Germany, which at that time was considered to be one of the reformist countries in the Soviet bloc. And, you know, the idea that this might ultimately lead China to being a capitalist country, a member of the World Trade Organization, people would have sent you to an insane asylum.
You know, on that question of interviews with people whose significance is hard to evaluate, you serendipitously ran across this fellow Misha on the Boston bombings who had contact with Tamerlan Tsarnaev, and you write about it, you know, it's coincident with the announcement of this book. Could you share with us any sense of his significance? The FBI seems to be ruling him out as a person of interest, but he certainly did have contact with this Armenian, had contact with Tamerlan Tsarnaev.
Well, thanks a lot for asking about that, John. This has just been the absolutely craziest week of my life. I certainly did not go off to Boston last week at the instigation of my editor at the New York Review of Books, thinking I was going to come away with this big story. Misha, I think his significance is that, well, I have to emphasize, when I talked to Misha, I came to his house. It was completely unexpected. He was completely flabbergasted that I was there. He had managed to kind of ride everything out in obscurity because nobody knew his actual name. And so when I talked to him, I tried to ask all the questions about the things we want to know, you know, how close was your relationship to Tamerlan? How Muslim are you? And so on and so forth. And these were all the sensitive things he didn't want to talk about. His family was trying to shoo me out the door. Don't talk about that. Don't talk about that. They were very, very anxious. So it's a little hard. There are a lot of open questions. I don't pretend that my interview answered any of the significant questions. But what I think is that he may have had an influence as far as helping Tamerlan to become more intense about his Islam. I'm inclined to be skeptical that Misha was some kind of, you know, Svengali who drove him to jihad. I just don't think that's likely.
It certainly gives you chills, and it must have given you chills. Quite a year for you, 2013. Christian Carroll is the author of Strange Rebels, 1979, and The Birth of the 21st Century. Thanks, Christian.
Thank you, John.
1994 was the year from this listener in Austin, Texas, began singing the blues in public and came out of my shell. Stay out of that shell, won't you? Give us your take on the best year of your life, 877-8-MY-TAKE. Send us a tweet, at The Takeaway. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. The Takeaway is produced by WNYC and Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.